Hi, Bunny. Sorry for waking you. Just wanted to take a quick look at your settings. I should probably learn how to use you properly instead of haphazardly feeding you sound. I know I got you to dictate notes, but I'm a little scared to listen back. It's pretty painful to hear your own voice. It's like facing a stranger, but a stranger who feels grotesque in their familiarity. So I'm hiding it all away inside you, and relying on your uncritical ears. Oh, oops. You're almost full. I better power you down, so have a good nap, Bunny, and I'll see you on the other side.
Attention passengers. What is voice? Where does it come from? Who does it belong to? Who is heard and who isn't? As an immigrant settler, I can make myself understood in this colonial language and in a tongue displaced from another land. These are the forces that dominate my introspection. But what about the tongue of the land I rest on? This work is created on the unceded traditional territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations, and I am thankful to Indigenous stewardship, which, since time immemorial, has cared and continues to care for the land I am blessed to live on. Displaced on their own land, Indigenous voices struggle against the forces of colonialism. In this struggle to be heard, we must center the marginalized and reconcile the erased. So I ask you to consider this. Between word and silence, what rises to speak? To sing? What code? What knowledge? What voice?
Hello, Bunny. We are doing a reading. Tarot reading.
Ooh.
Okay, and we're starting off with the Ace of Pentacles on the left.
Yes, so this resembles opportunity in your job field, financially, or just growth financially in general. The Ace of Pentacles is clutched in a hand that descends from the clouds. Here is a symbol of change and of opportunity. The hand suggests something being offered. Beneath the hand, a garden spreads out, covered in flowers. In the center, in the center stands an ancient arch through which mountains can be seen. Those peaks in the distance urge us to take those first steps into our journey towards those financial goals. That's your Ace of Pentacles.
Wow.
Okay. So your second card is going to be represents your goal and the relationship towards it. That's this guy. Yes, so you have upside down cups, three of cups. Three, right? Yeah. Okay, so for upside down reversed, third party interference, jealousy, too many cooks.
No, no.
So, with the maidens of the three cups dance with joy, for the ground beneath them is strewn with flowers, symbolizing the three women who are joy, beauty, and growth. This card suggests celebration in life passages, such as weddings, anniversaries, birthdays, and all those moments when loved ones gather for festivities. Mm. But we're at an upside down, so third-party interference, jealousy, too many cooks.
What does this mean?
Yeah.
So this is like...
You you might have maybe too many, many voices in your head. Maybe too many things being told to you. Maybe because you're getting third-party interference.
I just feel like I need
the right voice.
Focus on yours.
I don't know. I feel like I need more information about the world.
Like, what kind of information?
Well,
say voice?
Well, first of all, we have to say voice has many, 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 many meanings, okay? It's fundamental to our sense of self. At the same time, in this current electronic culture, our voices are displaced. They're displaced into our smartphones. People think they're talking on the smartphones. They're not. The smartphone's doing the talking, okay? It's an elaborate process of decoding and recoding. We think we're talking. We're not talking. So something strange is happening with voice. If voice is central to my being, to my personality, because it comes from inside me, and yet today it's displaced from me, we're in a very, very strange moment of sort of having to deal with our selfhood in a rather uncanny way, because I am both here and not here. I mean, what's happening here is dual right now. I'm speaking to you, but I'm also speaking into this microphone, and all sorts of encoding is going on, and then you're going to edit this. Will that be me when you edit it? Will that be you when you edit it? It's a very interesting question. It is fundamental to where we are in media today. People tend not to talk too much about voice in media studies. As you know, we tend to talk about orality, okay? So we tend to talk about voice in the general. But voice has had a huge presence in critical theory, especially when grammatology, Jacques Derrida was the principal figure, because Derrida was a great critic of voice. He said, for hundreds of years, people have invested a sort of primacy and personhood into voice, but he argued that, in fact, even voice is written. What did he mean by that? Well, I'm talking to you and you're talking to me because there's a code behind us, okay? That code allows you and I to communicate. So that's actually, our voices are already written. McLuhan profoundly disagreed, okay? He wanted to hang on to the voiceness of voice. Why? Well, he was a critic, actually, of literacy. Because literacy, as he put it, and I'll quote, shut the human voice down. The alphabet is silent. It's a phonetic system. It's a coding of the voice. But by no means can it capture the complexity of the human voice. The complexity of the human voice, the power of the human voice, the nuance of the human voice cannot be comprised by 26 little squiggles. Okay? Composers such as Strauss and Schubert would often write notes, one note on top of the other, because for them it was impossible to sing that. The singer has to negotiate her way around and through that notation. Also, how can you put the human voice into whatever it is, little squiggles on little bars? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a failed attempt to negotiate the human voice, but it also tells us how much we value, even to the present day, the human voice. I mean, I can't wear an earphone or a headphone. I just can't. I've tried. I was told, oh, this sonic reproduction, you'll hear through them. I can't stand it. I need it bouncing off the walls, okay? That's how I need it. I mean, go to a church, hear an organ recital, and there's something, a musical term called decay. So when the player stops playing, the sound is still bouncing against the church walls, which are acoustic spaces designed to transmit sound. Oh, that's magnificent. The decay is that moment you wait for, when the entire space resonates. Notice the word S-O-N in the word resonate, sound, resounds. Oh, it's magnificent. I love it. Love it. I'm Richard Cavell, and I'm co-founder of the Media Studies program at UBC. I've been teaching here for a number of years, and in fact, I did a CITR show many years ago about the Canadian performer of box music called Glenn Gould.
Can I ask how you entered the field of media studies?
So, at U of T, I was working with Northrop Frye, but the other great luminary there was Marshall McLuhan. And I had read a bit of McLuhan. He wasn't really on my radar. But one day I was invited by the former president of the college, of the university actually, Claude Bissell, out of the blue, this just happened out of the blue. Oh, Marshall's coming for lunch. He said, would you like to join us? So I had to put two and two together very quickly. Marshall could only be Marshall McLuhan. I said, yeah, sure. Well, that changed my life.
Wow.
I've never encountered a genius like this before or since. And I've met a lot of people. He was like, I will call him a volcano of ideas. Just the ideas spewed, okay? Changed my life.
So my name is Donna, and my ancestral name is Tang Tang, and this is a name given to me by my great-grandfather when I was born, to mean crabapple blossoms. Crabapples blossom in May. I was born in May, so hence my name. Hold that name very near and dear. And I use she, her pronouns at the moment. I am cis and queer and neurodivergent. And I live with chronic pain right now, so that's something that certainly I wanted to include all of these intersections, because these are also the places where I'm noticing myself, these opportunities for unlearning and relearning and also for reclaiming and healing. So that's where I'm located, located also on the Indigenous lands, the Coast Salish lands that are stolen and unceded of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. And this is also like a way, I think, even talking about my practice, very much centered and grounded in how to be in relationship in a good way. So much of healing is connected with sovereignty, yeah? How to be in good relationship, both with ourselves and with other people and the ecosystem. So that feels like is fundamental to also informing my practice, to acknowledge the lands that we're on.
Can you explain a little more about that connection between voice and like sovereignty?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the word sovereignty to me in so many ways just is sort of like, if I can use another word for it, is like the capacity to notice our choicefulness. Yeah, capacity to notice like how we're both in relationship and also we're, you know, sort of in relationship with ourselves. Yeah, sovereignty to me, so much of this is, you know, also the sense of like our lineages and our ancestry, you know, what, you know, it's not just kind of freedom in terms of freedom from colonial oppressive systems for me. It's also the sense of how do we remember, yeah, who we were or who we came from, yeah? And so that knowledge feels like is embodied in also voice, yeah? Like the sense of whose voice is here with me and whose voice, you know, have I, for the lack of a better word, have I, you know, sort of been shaped by, yeah? And, you know, this, so much of this also, you know, I think about the intergenerational, ancestral, you know, healing piece also in, you know, in so much of the work that we do in healing, not just my practice, yeah, but collectively. Really, for, I personally feel that a part of that is very much to inform, like, huh, like how can we reclaim our sovereignty back, yeah, so including our voice.
Can you tell me like how you came to this field?
Yeah, totally. Ooh, this has been like a bit of a long journey over to where I am in my field right now. I would say probably some of the earliest influences was myself being, you know, having sought out mental health support back in my like late teens, I would say mid to late teens, because of my own struggles around identity and migration and, you know, a lot of my kind of like lived experiences working also with, you know, practitioners who were supporting me at the time. And, you know, the modalities were very different then than it is now. Yeah, it was a little bit more CBT. Yeah, like top-down processing, all that stuff. And despite that, it was, you know, really supportive, really helpful. 20s was very much a time when I think I experimented with a lot of things. So I did a lot of work for a long time in, and doing a lot of like community development, community engagement, and cultural revitalization work, which is actually quite connected to what I'm doing now, except that at the time, you know, this was more in the shape and form of like a role within a not-for-profit doing development work. I think it was like more in my 30s that I started, there's something missing. I wanted to focus a little bit more on the tangible, you know, sort of grassroots, like really being on the ground and creating that change rather than the big picture of here's what you should do to get there. I was very much into dance and movement for a long time. So I met some mentors who did dance movement therapy. So I did some training with them, which really, I think, really solidified, you know, the fact that I really want to be doing body-based work, but how to make that happen was not something that I connected the dots, you know, to until a little bit later. What that really also helped support me in recognizing is whom do I want to be working with and how do I want to do this work and how, you know, perhaps even informed more of my own understanding of how I want to build my practice on sort of, you know, this very intersectional feminist, liberation-focused, and decolonial practices that is not just Western psychotherapy.
My name's Kira. My pronouns are they, he. I'm the programming manager at CITR, and outside of work, I'm creative. I like art. I like making things. I try to like lead a creative life. I grew up in a household where like being creative and artistic was very central to my upbringing. My mom's an artist, and so like I always had pencils and like crayons and markers and clay and things to just work with and play with. And that really was an important part of how I spent my time and continued to be for the rest of my life, still is. My art has been a lot about identity and self-understanding and having a difficult relationship to your body. Being a trans person is beautiful and also hard sometimes. And I have had a really difficult relationship to my body over time. So I would do hyper-real drawing, like graphite drawings of, like, I guess, like, bodies out of context. So, like, a hand or, like, the folds of a hand that's, like, clenched with an overlay of an abstract, like, acrylic design over top. And, yeah, my art has been a way for me to, like, process a lot. About my transition, about my visions and understandings of myself. And I do feel a little bit self-absorbed in my art because it's so self-reflective. But I'm making it for me. Like, it goes nowhere. It's for me to just, like, work things out. And it's nice to be able to do it in a way that is simultaneously very direct and indirect. Like, I don't have to put it into words or try and, like, explain it. I just get to, like, feel it onto the page.
One thing that I'm finding personally difficult in, as I'm, like, entering this world of audio and sound is how direct you have to be a lot of the times. That visual art kind of gives you a layer of plausible deniability.
Yeah,
I find.
I can relate to that. I think that one of the reasons I'm drawn to sound art and audio as a medium is because it kind of forces me into that directness in some way. I mean, there's a lot of room for abstraction in sound as well. But I don't want to, like, hide from things in my art. I want it to be a way to, like, open up doors rather than keep them shut. And I think that there's a lot of really interesting possibilities for that in sound, particularly in the use of, like, voices, people's voices, people telling their stories. It's a point of connection, and I think there's something really deeply embodied about using audio as a medium, because, I mean, there's an embodiment to, like, making any art. Like, you're literally in your body experiencing all of that. But with sound, the reception of the work is also a physical experience. And I think that's really cool.
I'm interested in what you're saying about embodiment. Has working with sound changed the way you sit in your body?
I think the biggest connection between my sense of embodiment and my relationship to, like, sound as a workspace or a medium has been developing, I guess, a comfortable way, or at least a tolerable way, to work with my voice. I've been on testosterone for just over a year now, but previously I had a really difficult relationship with my voice. It felt not like mine. And getting to work with sound and learning how to, like, manipulate my voice was really fun. And that's something that I can credit, like, inspiration to a lot of, like, trans women in music. I think of, like, Sophie, for example, who, like, she would manipulate and, like, pitch up and change her voice in her music to reflect, like, herself. And I think that's a really beautiful thing about, like, my relationship, like, any trans person's relationship to, like, voice, and the ways that we can use, like, sound manipulation to bring voice and, like, self together more closely. And on another, like, kind of aspect, to answer the same question in a different way, I have to feel more, I guess, when I'm working with sound. And I think it's because it's more immediate, and there's something about, like, the sensory experience of sound that it forces me to actually, like, be present in my feelings. When I'm, like, drawing, it's often a little bit dissociated. Like, there's something, like, I get into a flow state that is not necessarily, like, present. And with sound, I have to be there. Like, physically, emotionally, I have to be present with what I'm working with. And that's really interesting. It's something I really enjoy, doing, and it can be hard sometimes, depending on what you're working with as well. Sometimes you're working with a sound that is not a nice sound, and you're listening to, like, a screech over and over again, but you're getting that, like, physiological experience of the sound too that is informing how you use it. Yeah. With that, though, in my experience, even though my, like, vocal register sits differently now, I'm so used to the physical, like, sensation of carrying my voice, like, higher, more in, like, the front of my face, more in a, like, almost nasal kind of area, that it takes effort for me to allow myself to relax enough to speak in what is now my natural vocal register. And I still have to make a lot of effort towards it, which is frustrating. It's also really interesting that, you know, my body is so used to making sound, I guess, in a particular way from a particular place, and I have to relearn that.
Following something that you genuinely like and love, so maybe, yeah, just saying.
Yeah,
maybe. Tell those voices to shut the fuck up, because they're not you. Okay, on to the next one, girl. So, card 3 and 4 are going to be your gray zones. In between real and possible. These cards consider your unconscious motivations, and represent challenges or inner impediments to your goals.
Impediments?
Yeah.
Ah! Ah, Bunny, don't listen! Ah! 15 more seconds, Bunny.
Hey, Bunny. For better or worse, my voice has a lot of variety in it. The first time I listened back on a recording of myself, I could hear the strain in my throat. I thought, so it's true. I speak like I'm being strangled. I'm familiar with the sensation, of course. How the throat constricts itself so there's a peach pit where the voice box is supposed to be. It's the attempt to harness, to limit. The throat strains not because I'm speaking, but because I'm trying to speak quietly. It constricts to control some existing will, the will of the voice, which nevertheless has to be pushed out. I mean, I'm happy when I get the chance to speak dynamically, but not like this. Not with these unconscious pitches and self-conscious laughter that evaporate my convictions and my curiosity, my vulnerability, my solidity. I'm reminded of the things I carry, a history of battening down the hatches, lest the voice wreak havoc, or worse, betray me.
Three is your top, and that is 3 of Wands.
Oh,
we got
good.
Another 3 on our hands.
Threes.
Yeah. What is that about? Alrighty. 3 of Wands. We've got upright, anticipation, expansion, journey. A man watches 3 ships leaving his harbor. From his vantage point, this man can see everything. This panorama allows him to understand all that is coming and going. 3 wands surrounding him, showing him to be ready for new opportunities and challenges. These are firmly planted in the ground, symbolizing his solid commitment to his future projects. Anticipation, expansion, journey.
how would you describe the relationship between voice and space?
A voice produces space. So that's the first thing I would say. We're in an enclosed room right now, but our voices are also producing the space, okay? It would be a different space if we weren't in it. Well, it would probably be a silent space, but voice produces space. Also, recorded music will produce space, but it will do it in a different way. I'm told by a friend of mine who teaches in the Institute of Sonology, which is the Institute of Sound, in the Royal Conservatory in The Hague, Netherlands. So he's a composer of contemporary, very, 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 very experimental music. He also lectures about it, writes about it, and researches it. He tells me that sine waves, S-I-N-E waves, that you and I are producing right now, they're infinite. They go on forever. Now, in the moment here, they probably won't because they're in this enclosed space, and so they're bouncing back. I mean, you know what feedback is. Well, that's an example, right? But if we were in the open, technically those sine waves go on forever. It's an interesting thing to contemplate. Very interesting to contemplate because it implies a vast space. And of course, as you know, acoustic space is spherical. So it goes above me, below me, in front of me, and behind me. So it's quite different from visual space, which is only in front of me. Quite different. Very powerful space, and thus, maybe this is why you like embodied space, deeply inclusive. Yes, inclusive.
Sort of sometimes tease out what it is that I want to connect.
Why is that?
I wonder if it's connected to voice, mm-hmm. right? To hear my own voice. Sometimes to be able to hear myself say some things, almost make them more real. Yeah, so I wonder if the part of me that feels like I have to mumble, you know, a bunch of things before I make sense of them. It's almost like I have to just like be able to see them, I mean, metaphorically, to see them in front of me in order for me to kind of see the dots, which ones have dots that can be connected. As a young person, right, I go back to, you know, what led me here to begin with. There was so much that I needed to say. And there's no place or space for that to actually land. So I think that even at the time, what was perhaps the most helpful, it wasn't any of the modalities, it wasn't any of the things that my, you know, counselors and therapists at the time were trying to do with me or for me. It was just simply a space where I get to hear myself. I get to witness my voice landing. Somehow that was the most significant gift of that space for me. So I think from that point on, there's often been this longing, but it's also a noticing, like whatever it is that becomes words when that we utter out. Yeah, you know, even voice, if I think about how it forms, right, or the words that comes out of our mouth, there's actually a movement within our body. It moves those words out. And so for, you know, fundamentally, there's something the body's doing to actually carry it and then to move it out. So I love how voice is so connected to the body in many ways.
A person speaks, and then if they have the space for that voice to exist as it is, that is the voice being able to land. From there, you can be heard or not.
Yeah. I love the way you reflected that back to me, because I think that is the difference. All of us, throughout the course of our lives, especially in the marginalized spaces, because of these experiences of not being heard, of being oppressed, of minimized, yeah, that has an impact on even our sense of I have a voice. So to have our voice simply exist becomes a struggle. To actually recognize and reclaim our voice as is, never mind if people are going to hear it or not, becomes a struggle. The voice has to exist for it to be heard.
Radical presence. It's a radical sense of presence because, I mean, especially in an immediate context, to speak to someone is sharing so much about, yeah, the contents of your words, but also like the person that's related to that too. It's not just text on a screen, it's a person that is sharing something with you. Yeah. And you have to be present with that person as well as what they're saying. It takes a lot of vulnerability, and it can be really hard to find a space in which you're confident in, like, being able to express yourself through the use of your voice. Like, actually speaking can be a really big thing to do, depending on the context that you're in, who you're with, how you feel about yourself and your voice and the way it sounds. But I think that it's something very deeply vulnerable and deeply rooted in, like, the soul, I guess. That's maybe getting a bit esoteric. I think that there's so much power in being able to hear someone speak and speak something that's true to them, regardless of what that is. It's a powerful thing. Okay, so during the pandemic, like 2021, I was working at another radio station, CJSF, which is out in Burnaby, as a, like, communications and outreach assistant. And one of the things that I did was create a zine about voice. It was about radio, but really it was about, like, the power and feeling of being able to share. And share without, like constraint, really. And what that did for me on, like, an individual and also, like, interpersonal level. And I thought a lot about that while we're talking, because in that zine, one of the things that I kept coming back to was this feeling of catharsis, that having a space to, particularly with radio, because you can't see the people on the other end of the microphone, to share without worry of, like, immediate judgment, and to have that sense of release of, like, I've been thinking about these things and they mean a lot to me, and I want to share them, but I don't have a medium for it, and radio became that medium. And often I was just, like, talking about music and being like, I chose this song because I'm going through a heartbreak, and it feels like that. So it can be really small things, but having a place to speak my feelings felt so, like, such a release. And I often envisioned it as, like, speaking into a void, which it's not. It's not a void. There's somebody on the other end of it. But I think, like, my psyche when I'm on the radio is just, like, there's filters, but, like, unburdened expression, I guess. And that's what I find really beautiful about, like, audio mediums, is that they can become a place of unburdened expression.
Unburdened expression.
For me, at least.
That's I think, a very hard thing to find these days. Maybe always.
Yeah, and it's definitely not something everyone is able to experience with radio or podcasting or whatever it might be. And I didn't experience it right away. It took me like 3 years of doing radio before I was like, oh, this is like such a relaxed space for me. But it's been a huge benefit to like the person that I've become.
Picking them all out.
All
he's like, I gotta go. Okay, so we got seven of swords, upright, theft, stealth, untrustworthy. A man stealthily attempts to remove four swords from a military encampment. He reaches for one of the three other swords planted in the ground, knowing he can succeed. The flags in the ground symbolize the rules and laws he heedlessly breaks. By showing himself to be untrustworthy, he is cutting himself off from civilization. Theft, stealth, untrustworthy.
Am I up to no good?
Maybe there's something you're doing that's self-destructive in a way. Cutting you off from civilization, meaning community, possibly. Maybe.
It invites you to examine your actions and motivations. Serves as a reminder to consider the consequences of dishonesty and deceit. This card encourages you to be cautious of manipulative individuals and to trust your instincts.
Goes back to that too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Third party voices.
The power of the voice today has been profoundly mediated electronically, but in a displaced fashion. So voice is very much shaping the medium, but it's doing so in what McLuhan would have called its amputated form. Okay, you remember all media are extensions and amputations. So when I'm speaking on the smartphone, I'm extending my voice, but it's not me who's speaking. I've amputated my voice. It's the smartphone that's speaking, right? But on that level, it's extremely powerful, right? I can talk to someone thousands of miles away on my phone, right? So it's very, very powerful in that sense, in the distance, in the space that it can address. The problem is, as McLuhan pointed out, and I think quite correctly, media history is recursive. So as McLuhan said, electronic media would basically reclaim orality and remediate it. So just as the muses sang through the poet, we speak through our phones. Okay, it's precisely the same process, except that, huge difference, this disembodiment, okay? My phone is doing the talking for me, it's doing the speaking for me, okay? So my voice is inside the phone. I mean, I'm sort of losing my voice, right? And if I lose my voice, what then is happening to me? Well, I'm losing a degree of my ontology, a degree of my being. My being is being taken over by electronic media, and of course, that's what people fear about AI. I mean, we're already using AI. We use AI unconsciously every single day. What worries people is the loss of that human dimension, the loss of myself, right? That's the big worry. Not so much the technology, or, if you will, the technologization of the self, such as the self disappears ultimately into the technology. That's very scary. Very scary. It is what McLuhan called the violence of the media. What is the violence? It takes away individual identity. You have to regain it. And in the context created by mass media, the only way people can see to regain that identity is violence. Otherwise, you seem to be totally engulfed. It's mass media, after all, right?
The world.
What are we going to do about the world? Oh, dear.
We will make podcasts.
We'll make podcasts, that's it. Well, no, you just answered a question. Oh. There's the individual voice. The podcast. There you go. Reclaiming the voice.
Yeah,
You're taking the voice out of a mass-mediated context and individualizing it. So you're actually doing something political when you do podcasts.
You know, I recognize the way that there's, like, all these other external voices that are wrestling with my own voice inside of me and what comes out. Maybe not my voice at all, or a combination of things. But at the same time, our own voice is also born out of an amalgamation of other voices. And so it's been a process of shedding voices, or like moving them outside of me as external voices. How do we know what voices are external and what are the voices that actually build up our voice?
I think you hit the nail on the head of this is ultimately the practice. Yeah, I say practice because, you know, interestingly enough, we actually are more well practiced in internalizing voices that are not our own. Yeah, without necessarily discerning, is this a voice that belongs to me that is generative for my voice? Yeah, so it's a practice of, you know, I would say maybe as simple as pausing and noticing how our body responds to that voice. Yeah, and when I say voice, what I also mean is, you know, is this voice, is this message, in fact, generative? Does this, you know, add to my voice? And when I say generative, this, you know, our body has a felt sense. Yeah, this is not kind of residing in our thinking, cognitive, you know, brain that very much only knows rationality, yeah, and logic. This resides in our body. Ways in which that you might notice, ooh, there's a lot of congruence. This is aligning, this isn't. Yeah, this contracts and this expands. And over time, with that information, then we get to feel out over time whose voice, what voices do I want to actually internalize, and what voices have I already internalized that, in fact, I need to release.
Happens when so many different voices come together?
I think it pushes us closer to having a collective understanding of where we're at. It might not be a resounding voice that guides us as a culture or whatever. I don't know if that's possible, but I think we can get a state of where we're at as people by talking. And sharing with each other, or even just like exploring what other people are having to say, even like the crappy stuff, not necessarily like promoting it or giving it space to grow, but knowing that it exists.
Are there like particular ways you feel that community has transformed your voice?
I think that the biggest thing has been actually learning to use my voice and use the privileged positions that I do have to benefit a larger community ideal. I'm very shy. I've always been very shy, but being challenged in that, not even directly, but like through larger communications and like conversations, being challenged of what I'm potentially not doing by being silent, or the benefit that could be drawn from other people if, like, I were to share my perspective. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, community has pushed me to be more active in the things that are important to me and to, like, my personal and community politics, that I don't know if I would have gotten there in the same way if I hadn't had that challenge.
Final card, Miss Five, number five is the intersection where it all becomes real. This card offers practical advice on how to achieve your goal and what to do to get where you want to be.
Oh,
King of Pentacles.
Upside down.
Yeah. It's okay, sometimes upside down actually. Very good advice. Alrighty. King of Pentacles, reversed, authoritarian, domineering, weak-willed. The King of Pentacles appears very regal, sitting on a throne carved with massive bulls. He is surrounded by representations of his material success, shown in the curling vines and flowering plants. His scepter shows his power as he clasps it in his right hand. A coin in his left hand tells us his financial stability. He's the builder and ruler of the castle, showing he knows what to do with his resources.
So, King of Pentacles reversed as advice signals that it is time to get organized in your thinking.
Okay, I know.
Your goals can quickly
just telling you again.
This idea that we are returning to orality, but then also that we need to reclaim our individuality. I'm not sure how to reconcile these two.
You're already doing it, okay? You're already doing it. You're talking back. You're talking back to the night.
Oh, to the night.
To the night.
What do you mean by the night?
What do I mean by the night? You cried for night, says Beckett in one of his plays. You cried for night. It falls. Now cry in darkness.
Oh.
You're crying in darkness. Cry has two senses, right? It's weeping, but it's also making a cry. A cry is a fundamental way of saying, I am here. I exist. I am I. When The Angel Descends in Angels of America by Tony Kushner in Act Two, the angel descends and says, I. You have to become an angel. McLuhan gave us two choices. You're an angel or you're a robot. Okay? You, Raph, are an angel.
What is voice to you?
Voice is evidence of existence. Voice is breath. Voice is a way we witness ourselves. Voice is relationality. Voice is energy. Voice is a lineage. Voice is history. And voice doesn't just end with you. Voice carries on. Your voice never disappears. How do I feel about my own voice? I'm very grateful for what it has become. I feel like there's more to my voice now than my like earlier years, like, and this is why I think a voice has history. You know, this is kind of the accumulation or culmination of calling back our ancestors, you know, healing work that, you know, we've done. Yeah, this, like, all of that. And I feel like my voice now also has been informed by so many other collective voices. Whether or not this is, like, you know, movements and, you know, activism that has really informed how to use my voice, like this conscious use of my voice. And voice is power. That's another thing that voice is, yeah? How to consciously, you know, use my voice in, like, generating, informing the world and the communities and the sort of relationalities that I want to see and that I want to be a part of. You know, I imagine walking with you and imagine co-creating with our voice. Mm-hmm. Right? A narrative, a thread, kind of this collective thread.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, I'm grateful for it.
Absolutely. What draws you to voice as an area of exploration?
A lot of things. One of them being the fact that I grew up I am a very quiet person. I'm like very shy, very quiet. And so, you know, voice was always something that I felt like I had to impede or hinder, hold back. But suddenly I'm in this like audio medium. I have to break a lot of the learned habits that I have, and also just to become more sensitive to sound, not just my own, but others. And so the excitement is I want it to transform me. I want my work in this medium and my practice to transform the way that I carry myself through the world. I do think being quiet lends itself to the power of your own voice. I have this resistance to adding to the noise. I think like in our technologically saturated world, we're just like bombarded with talking and none of it is useful. And so I'm trying to develop appreciation and acceptance of my quietness. I want to tap into it more as a resource to make sure that what I'm saying is intentional, you know?
Oh, there's so much noise. There's so much noise in the world, on the internet. It can be overwhelming and also so easy to feel like you're just gonna get lost in. So I understand.
Hi, Bunny. Once in a while, I'll watch videos on speech. How to communicate clearly, how to enunciate, that kind of thing. It's fun to practice, but I have such a block around the risk of being overheard. Sometimes it's not enough even to be totally alone. I can't shake the fear someone's going to hear me. I can't shake the fact that I hear me. I've noticed that when I'm quieter, pitching up helps it resonate more in my chest rather than in my throat. Whereas when I'm being loud, pitching my voice down helps it resonate more in my chest, which is kind of interesting. But what I want is that operatic feeling of singing from your belly, you know? I want to feel the resonance take up my whole body and then spill out to vibrate the world outside. I want to be more of my voice. I want to be more of my voice. I want it to create its own space into which possibilities will pour.
Take what you want from that, sit with that, have
thank
that.
You,
that's
you.
Your reading.
I will be right back. No. Hang on, don't do the next reading without me. Goodness.
Love that. I'll shuffle her up. You took a picture already?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to pause.
Attention, please. We thank the translators, thank the sign painters, thank the map makers for their feeble sight lines strewn across the boundary of a horizon beyond our puckered holes and skins. We thank Hi-Fi 240p oracles and crystal acid clairvoyeurs who bite on the dance floor and fill the space when shaped like us, like angels. And thank the forgotten muses, those half-stuttered mossy tunes. Thank the dirt. Thank the grain of the voice spinning in the head of a needle and the line. What I mean is, thank the speakers who cancel withered noise. And thank the souls who whittle landscapes out of rooms. And thank the air and the space inside me, which is my voice, which is powerful and silent.
Hi, Bunny.